Bozeman St. John.
All right.
The choice was, do you try to do what everybody else is doing? So it meant that I had to become, you know, just all of everything that I have. The dream is really possible. It takes belief, of course, we know that, because every single day you have to get up and try again. Even when the no's come, there's still a need to get up the next day and try again. So it really is possible if you tell yourself it is. I learned what it meant to walk into a room and not care when everybody else turned around and looked at you.
The Wise Guides is a conversation show hosted by me, Amber Petty, that aims to extract some beautiful pearls of wisdom from our fabulous female guests who, like all of us, have learnt something about life worth sharing with the world. Once upon a time, most of my life ago, I thought I was destined for a life on the stage, with my name being Tallulah. Because Tallulah was the female lead in a stage show I wrangled about 30 kids at my primary school to be in. The show was Bugsy Malone, and at the ripe old age of 9, I felt it was time that I became a casting director, a theatre director, wardrobe coordinator, and most importantly, the star of the show. My capacity for plucking talent with no previous nor current desire for becoming young actors was decidedly fierce. I simply could not fathom why putting on a major stage show for an audience of 9-year-olds and younger wouldn't be everybody else's ultimate dream. Despite the occasional protestation of the cast, now anointed with roles I'd bestowed upon them, now coerced into rehearsals for a play they never auditioned for, I forged ahead with my dream. I had found my Bugsy and I had become his Tallulah. Not long after, as I stood in the school's quadrangle, singing God Save the Queen with the rest of the school, I noticed something that didn't look right. So I decided to address it. While the 200 or so children began marching inside the school, I began marching towards 10 young boys who were drumming us back into class. With their sticks clicking and clacking against each other, their one cool trick, I yelled over them, "Hey, why aren't there any girls drumming with you?" They gave me nothing. They were having their moment. "Excuse me, why aren't there any girls in your drumming team?" I shouted once again. A teacher standing nearby asked me what the problem was. I told her I didn't think it was fair there were no girls in the band. "That's because there's no girls in our drumming class," she said. With my best friend in tow, I announced to the teacher the two of us were drummers, much to my bestie's surprise, and we wanted to join the band. And then I held her gaze. I knew in that moment all there was between us was me and my slightly distorted version of the truth, and her ability to say no. But she didn't. As the boys finished their set, she announced to them, a little wearily, that Stephanie and I would be joining the band. By the next week's assembly, there we were, drumming alongside the boys, completely out of sync, distractingly out of time, but we had arrived. We were in the band. I look back at moments like these, clues in my childhood about the hustler I was and the hustler I would go on to be.
I'm Bozeman St. John. Most people call me Boz, and I am the head of consumer global marketing for Apple Music and iTunes.
That's quite a title. And speaking of quite a title, a friend of mine who also works for Apple brought my awareness to you, Boz, and she was talking about you and she was saying how amazing you are. And she said, look her up on Instagram. She's under Badass Boz. And I'm like, oh my.
That's correct.
God, who is this? I love this woman already. And then you're in your bio, it says self-proclaimed badass and baby mama jammer. And I thought, my God, my bio that says writer, podcaster and PR chick felt very, very beige. What? Can you tell me, though? I was intrigued because I thought, I know this woman is the type of woman that, you know, calling herself a badass and a baby mama jammer means something, and I want to know what it is.
Well, I think everyone would like to know, you know. I think I'm one of the few people verified as a badass, you know, and I take a lot of pride in that.
Yeah, you've earned those stripes.
I do. Yes, I wear it proudly. And, you know, I feel like, you know, sometimes the self-proclamation is really the only way to go, you know, because if you don't claim it for yourself, very rarely would other people claim it for you. So I planned quite a long time ago that I was going to just continue to basically toot my own horn as loudly as possible. And that eventually someone would recognize the tooting and maybe join me. So that's what I've been doing, you know, and I find a lot of joy in that. You know, it's like we shouldn't be ashamed to celebrate who we are, even when it's maybe a little bit edgy or a little bit different. You know, I think sometimes we feel afraid to really show our full stripes.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that what I'm showing every day is that you can live really loudly, you know, and that there's no fear in doing that.
I love that attitude. I really do love that attitude. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people grow up kind of believing that you need to sort of tone it down.
Mm.
That's something that people have told me a lot, and I get it. If I'd had 4 or 5 wines, I'd totally need to tone it down. But just, you know, on a day-to-day level, why should we tone it down? We should be cranking it up. And it's led you.
Oh, absolutely.
But, I mean, it's led, and this is why I just thought, oh, my God, I really want to speak to Bose. And, you know, she's just got the art of hustling through life down.
Mm.
And I do follow your Instagram. It's not just all about going, hey, I'm a badass and I'm this and I'm that. It's not an I'm me. There is such a balance of wisdom there that I think that we can learn, which I'll get to. But just tell me a little bit, because, you know, some people will be listening to this and they'll say, she sounds fabulous, but who is she? They won't know that, they won't know that you were, like, nominated as, you know, top female executive of the year by Billboard. Nice acclaim. Congratulations. Mm. But you have
Thank you.
An outstanding career before being at Apple. Can you just trace back a tiny bit to when you were at Spike and then going into Beats Music and PepsiCo, and just give me a little recap for people that don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I that's what I love most about, you know, the current time that I'm in. And I guess for a lot of people who find themselves, you know, sort of suddenly thrust into the limelight, that you know, sometimes people mistake it for some sort of overnight success.
Yeah,
you know, and that's not the case. It's never the case.
No, it's
absolutely
not the case.
Never.
Yeah.
And for me, that's certainly true. You know, I've been in advertising and marketing almost 20 years, and it has been quite a winding road. But, you know, it's so interesting because now I have the luxury of sort of looking back and pretending as if I had a plan all along, which I really did not.
but somewhere in your spirit, there must have been a plan. And I think this is the whole thing, that there is sort of a spiritual plan, I think, a lot of the time for us. But down here, you know, you can do your meditation, you can do all sorts of stuff to try and connect you a bit to that. But you often don't know where that inner journey is taking you. But you did, so you started in advertising and you have ended up being so influential in terms of marketing and advertising to do with music, and have, you know, worked with, like, Dr. Dre, you know, Beyonce. I mean, just, you know, I saw you've just been at the Super Bowl with Lady Gaga, and she's hugging you like,
yes, Gaga,
like she owes everything
that's
to
my
you.
Boo.
Yeah, like, amazing. Like, how did you, though, end up, did you originally start in advertising working on a music brand, or how did it happen?
Well, I think that's all part of it. You know, you say about the plan, and although there wasn't necessarily a written out plan, I always felt called to just follow, you know, that inner, I don't even know what to call it. You know, it's like your gut or your intuition, or, you know, at some point I just described it simply as my happiness, you know?
Yeah.
And I never was happy in jobs that didn't allow me to somehow dabble in music, entertainment, you know, pop culture types of things. And sometimes those jobs paid me less. Sometimes it had less power. Sometimes it didn't seem like the right career ladder step. Much to the chagrin of my parents or my friends or advisors or whoever, you know, is like, don't take that job. You should take that job, you know. But that always failed, you know. And so for me, the journey from starting at Spike Lee's advertising agency, and by the way, I was his assistant, you know.
So you started from the bottom?
Totally at the bottom. Yeah. Like, you know, grabbing coffee and, like, you know, dry cleaning and all that. And I had an Ivy League degree, you know, and most of my friends had graduated and gone on to become bankers on Wall Street and whatnot. And I was like, yeah, so I'm going to go get this guy's coffee. That's what I'm going to do. You know?
But I love the way...
being paid nothing.
That really resonates to me. I was saying to some friends that I was speaking to, and I'm like, you know, and I shared obviously my little story about me, you know, hustling at primary school and all that sort of stuff. And whilst, not that it's competition, but, like, I haven't done it on the global stage that you have done, but I get you so much. And one of the things that I think is interesting, like, I was a rat bag at school, so I didn't get the degree. I mean, I was, like, literally practically being, you know, marched to the front gate by my principal by the end of year 11. Like, we were just...
I love it.
We were just mutually so done. So I knew that I was a little... I was a little behind
that. Hysterical, by the way.
I know.
Hysterical.
Oh, no,
I'm trying not to laugh because I know it's serious, but
yes.
I'm I'm desperately trying not to laugh.
But this poor, okay. I just want to say also that this poor bloody principal, she didn't actually have to take me at this school. I was booted out of a private school halfway through year 10. And so my mother.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so my mother had to take me off to this. It wasn't a private school, but it was an all girls school. I said, I'm not going to school with boys. Like, I'm not ready to deal with all of that as well. So mum took me to this school that was sort of a few suburbs away. So they didn't actually have to take me from a legal or government standpoint. So we went in there and my mum lied to this principal. She said to me, because of course my grades were shocking, like they were E's and F's and smart asses and get her out of here and we hate her, you know, like there was nothing to present. There was nothing to hustle. But my mum did hustle because she just decided to lie. And she said to this woman, which wasn't necessarily a lie, I should say. It's just, it was a little bit of creative license. She said, look, she's just gone a bit off the rails since my husband and I divorced. They divorced when they divorced when I was 6 months old. Like, someone's done it.
I think I love your mother.
Oh, yeah, she's.
I love your mom.
She's
let's get creative. Yeah. You know, why not?
She's outrageous. Creative. But what I was going to say was what I resonate with you just saying, you know, you had this Ivy League, you know, and then you started at the bottom. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go and get Spike's coffee. But it is about starting from the bottom and really owning that and wanting it. But as you said, you've got to choose something that you give a crap about, because otherwise why are you, I'm not going to want to go and get the coffee for, you know, the man that owns the printing factory. But if it's the man that owns, is high up in a place that I resonate and I am excited about, shit, yeah, I'll get that coffee.
Right, exactly. And that's what it is. You know, it's like, I wanted the opportunity to be exposed to his world. You know, he was doing, and at the time, you know, I mean, even still, obviously he's making quite a few, you know, great films. But I was so enamored by what he was doing and just wanted to get into his world. And by the way, you know, I loved being out, you know, I was the life of the party all the time,
you know,
in college, even during the, even during the Ivy League days, you know, it's like, I still owe the university a fee for this party I threw where literally the paint got rubbed off the walls by people, you know, butts. I don't know if I can curse, but you know, people's
yes,
butts
print
on the wall. Literally, and they're still looking for this money.
Oh,
but in any case,
I
had always been drawn to like the social life, the, you know, party life, the entertainment. Like, I'd always been drawn to that. And so that's what I wanted to follow. And I really did. I mean, I know, you know, quite a few people say the same thing, but I did stumble upon it as a business, you know, that it became something that I didn't even know I didn't know was possible, you know, to have a career like this. Or to be in this world and make money doing it. But I thought, you know what? I've just graduated from college. I have a little bit of time to sort of figure out what I want to do. My parents weren't yet yelling at me about, you know, finding the career. And I was like, I'm going to move to New York City and I'm going to work for Spike Lee and I'm going to do it. You know, and really, I think some of that also is true in that what you wish and say for yourself actually becomes reality.
Yes.
You know, it's a really big lesson early on that, you know, what you speak into the universe, and I believe this at my very core, becomes your reality, you know? And if you tell yourself that you cannot do it, or you tell yourself it's never going to happen, or you tell yourself this is impossible, then it is. That is what it is.
That's exactly it.
It's like, yeah, I mean, I was 22 years old. There's no reason in the world why that opportunity should have opened itself up to me, but it did, because maybe you want to call it naivete or whatever else, but I feel like my whole life and my whole career has happened because of those moments, you know, where I felt like, but why not? You know, this, of course I can do that. You know, of course. Like, I mean, even by the time I got to Apple, yeah, I don't have any experience in tech. You know, I'm not an engineer. I've never built an app in my life.
Yeah.
You know, but what I know is entertainment. I know pop culture and I know it better than most people. And so how do you turn that into something that can really influence one of the biggest companies in the world that uses that cross section of sort of what is pop culture and what is tech to make lovable things, you know, and lovable platforms.
Yes.
And so for me, that's what I'm doing. And in fact, you know, the photo you saw of me and Gaga from last night, that was sincere. You know,
I can tell.
I care. Yeah.
From both sides.
I care about her music. Yeah. And I care about her life, you know, and I care about what she's going through. I care that was the biggest day she's ever been on and that she was nervous, you know,
yeah.
I care.
Yes.
And I think that to me, at the end of the day, if you really feel it passionately and deeply, and you tell yourself that you can do it and that it's, you know, the opportunity is there and you're able to go get it, then why not? Well, of course, the universe is going to open up to you.
So just what you're saying there and what I identify with you and what I really love, and I love to be able to look up to other women, not to just sit there and admire and do nothing about my own life, but it is so nice to recognize parts of yourself in someone else that's doing it in such a way that really continues to, it feeds energy into, you know, you and, you know, whatever I'm kind of wanting to do. And another thing, like, you know, that I kind of grew up with, I remember I was said to my mum, "Mum, can I borrow your car?" And she's like, "Why?" And I said, "Oh, I have to drive down to Frankston because I'm going down to interview the manager of a strip club." And she's like, and she's just shaking her head. And it was for this small kind of little bit culty kind of like TV show called Bloke's World. Can you believe it? Anyway.
And wow, so, yeah, amazing.
I know. God knows how I ended
That's
up.
That's incredible.
Yeah, like absolutely incredible. Anyway, so I just remember she was very reluctantly giving me the keys, and she said to me as I was just about to drive out the driveway, I wound down the window and said, "Thanks." And she just shook her head and she said, "I just wish you could be a bit more mainstream." And I just saw it upset me, but it's like what I love about you is, and I think what Lady Gaga would love about you and vice versa, is you are a hustler. And I think that used to feel like it was a dirty word, like, you know, oh, the hustler, it means they're like a used car salesman or even that mag. But it's like hustling is literally getting into life with passion that's already kind of packaged up in you, not necessarily knowing where it's going to go, but really just, you know, it's like kind of being a jockey and whipping yourself from behind, but also intuitively knowing who is in front of you and how to play a game with them. And even someone like Lady Gaga, who's got a squillion people behind her now, but she hustles herself every day. She's hustled herself onto that stage at the Super Bowl. It's not just about just a great manager going, "Hey, she's free, do you want her?" Like, she's a hustler and it's hard.
Yeah, it truly is very hard, you know. And I think the other thing that is really important is that it's not just hard to keep yourself motivated, but to have a village, you know, of voices or a chorus of voices that also keep you motivated.
Yeah.
You know, because the hustle is not just a singular thing. You know, it's like you can have all the hustle in the world, but there are days when, there are many, many, many days, probably more days than not, when the hustle is really hard, you know, and terrifying and depressing. Yeah, exactly. And so it's not as if, like, you know, I love, like, all the memes and things where, like, the hustler mentality and, you know, it glorifies hustling.
Girl boss,
and I'm like, how many times? I'm like, how often do you feel joy in the hustle? You know,
only when
there is none, okay?
Yeah, that's only FYI. When you just pulled it off, and that is fleeting, and then you're usually hustling the rest of the details to further expand what you've just hustled.
Exactly. But, you know, it also takes, like I'm saying, a chorus of voices to keep you encouraged, you know? And that's, I think, also at the base of not just, you know, the celebrity friends or the artist friends that I have, but my own circle, you know, of warrior women and men and friends and family and whoever else who continue to push me forward, you know, because that is equally as important. You know, if you have people around you, it's not just about you telling yourself that you can do it, but if other people tell you that you can do it, or the other way that they tell you can't do it, that's as damaging. You know, so being very careful about who's in the circle, who's
so
hustling
true.
With you, even if they're not in the same hustle.
I've found as I've got older, the people that I have to surround myself and willingly want to, but I've understood that it's a better alignment, not just for me, but also for them. It's a two-way, you know, friendship. But it's people that are hustling themselves, even if it's a slightly less loud way or a slightly less tooting way than maybe you or I, Bose, but they're hustling and making shit happen, you know. So they get how you've got to drag yourself out of bed and you've signed up for a big game. And I think also people that believe in you, because I think the hustlers can go through periods of time where people kind of humour you. And you know what I mean? And this would, you know, obviously you've been kind of, I'm sure, haven't been humoured for quite some time because you've been living and your career has been on for a long time. But, you know, when you are those big dreamers, as hustlers are, there is a period of time where people just go, "Oh, well, you've always got a little project going on, haven't you?" You know, that kind of thing. You've got to remove those people to keep yourself fueled.
Yeah, because those people can, like I said, be as damaging because they don't believe in what you believe, you know, and can really sow the doubt and make you demoralized, right?
That's exactly it.
Which is really deflating. And then you won't achieve because it's impossible, actually, for any of us to do this by ourselves, you know. So, again, it's like that sort of camaraderie within the circle is really important, or is equally as important as your own motivation. But I felt like, you know, over the course of my career, I've had, you know, different people who have been motivating at different points, you know, and sometimes those have changed. And I think that's the other thing, is understanding that there's fluidity in that, and that it's not always the same person or the same group of people who champion. And by the way, from job to job too, you know, I think sometimes we look for like almost like a silver bullet.
Yeah.
You know, someone who's like going to be some constant. And that's why I even hate the word mentor and that kind of thing, you know, because it feels so heavy. It feels like, ooh, I've been chained to this person and I've got to like drag them along everywhere.
That's,
you know,
yes,
and you
feel like, you know,
it's
as
a terrible
you said,
word.
Yeah. There's something very corporate and stiff and static about that word.
Yeah.
And I think also it does make you feel a little bit like, you know, when you've chosen that one mentor, that it's like, yeah, as you said, if I can't be fluid and then suddenly I find Bose over there and I'm like suddenly, you know, like watching her and like going, oh, wow, she's amazing. Am I cheating on my mentor? You know, am I seen as fickle because suddenly I don't feel like I need this person anymore? But it's like, you've got to keep moving and as you said, be fluid and find the next new person that matches what you're looking for or need in that next sort of chapter of your life.
Totally, 100%. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the ebbs and flows, you know, it's like friendships, it's like everything, you know, it's like there are some people who come into your life and they serve, you know, a particular purpose at a particular time and then the relationship wanes, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay, you know, it's okay. That's not detrimental. It doesn't say anything terrible about you. It doesn't say anything terrible about the person, you know, but I think we've all got to be cognizant of that too, you know, that those things change in the course of your career and over the course of your life, you know, personally and professionally too.
The Zoma St. John had herself some badass recognition last year, winning Billboard's Top Female Executive of the Year of 2016, with BuzzFeed posting, "Zoma St. John is the coolest person to ever go on stage at an Apple event." There were other awards and nominations that followed her last year, not to mention the fact that as I showed a recent photo of Zoma to a friend of mine, after seeing it show up on her Instagram feed, the guy was so mesmerised by her fascinating fierceness, I had to point out that the guy standing to her right, yeah, that's Barack Obama. Oh, and the woman on her left, Michelle Obama. "Oh my God, I didn't even notice them," he said. I'm not a massively obsessive type when it comes to following particular people on Instagram, but I can't help but occasionally check what Badass Boz is up to, because so many of her posts say something insightful, something powerful, something laced with a kind of wisdom that really excites me. Like the one I read the other day under a selfie. In the photo, she's looking contemplative, but self-assured. Her fabulous mane of black hair is swept over one shoulder, and she has one hand resting up against her face, and her lips are red, and her nails are red. Her post reads, "Someone once advised me never to wear red lipstick or red nail polish at the office because it's too bold. It would send the wrong message. Well, I'm on my way to Apple HQ to meet with the new CEO. Red nails, red lipstick."
I keep referring to your Instagram because it really is kind of like, the way I think you share is very much the story of your life, and I think that it's really lovely. Mm-hmm. And I know that you share a lot of that because you're wanting to sort of give back to other women and tell a different story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there might be a photo of you kind of sitting there. It might be a selfie of you on a plane. But you can tell from your words and even your expression on your face that exactly as we said, you know, yeah, here you are going off to some incredible place to probably, you know, have some major meeting that might result in, you know, Beyonce doing the Super Bowl or, you know, the next major campaign for Apple, like literally, you know, make, you know, present, this is what I think we should do, you know, and we're going to kind of put that out to the world. But you can tell that there's moments where you're like, here I am getting out there again. And it's not always easy. I often have quite bad night's sleep, and then I have to get up and I go, oh, Christ, what am I doing today? And then suddenly it comes to you, and sometimes there's days when really big stuff's going down. And also, not to get into it now, but, you know, you did lose your beautiful husband 3 or 4 years ago, which has left you as a single mother. You have a lot on your plate that's not just about work, but, of course, I'm sure that all weaves into everything that you do because you are passionate. But those mornings when you wake up and maybe you've had a bad night thinking about him, maybe you've had a night thinking about your daughter, worrying about the world, whatever that may be, what is something you, when you wake up and you've had a couple of hours sleep and you're feeling rattled and you have a big day ahead, you've got to get on that plane, say goodbye to your daughter, how do you kind of rustle the hustle on those mornings?
Yeah. Well, you know, God, that's such a great question because it's, you know, that's life. You know, I really don't hold back on what I share. But you know what's so funny? I feel like sometimes people are so taken aback by it. And I'm not at all. You know, I've had several people say, oh, you share too much. Maybe you shouldn't share so much. You know,
no. And that's people's stuff with being uncomfortable with being exposed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And I don't have those fears. I feel like a lot of times that's also therapeutic for me. What we realize is that we have a shared human experience, you know, and people can identify with that moment that you're feeling, you know. So when I do, you know, if it's a selfie on the plane where the bags are extra big around my eyes that day.
Yeah, but you show that.
And no matter... Exactly. I'm like, it doesn't matter how much red lipstick I put on, you're still going to see those bags. You know, it's like,
right.
I mean, really, you know, and I say that.
Yeah.
And people will respond in a way that sometimes is so surprising to me, you know, because you don't even realize that, you know, you're not the only one, you know. And I think that's what always surprises me and also gives me some sort of courage, you know, because I realize that, well, you know what? There's someone out there, too, who is either feeling the same way or felt that way yesterday. And today they feel so much better. You know, so my tomorrow will probably feel better. You know, this is just today. And I also, you know, I really do lean on my community, you know, and my community meaning, you know, my friends and family and sometimes my colleagues, like, to help me. I think there's no weakness in sharing, you know, when you're not feeling great. You know, there really isn't any weakness in that. And it's not rare. My best friends will tell you that it's not rare to get a call from me like at 6:45 in the morning, you know, when my throat is all scratchy and they can barely make out what I'm saying, you know, and either be crying or yelling or something, you know, and asking for
help.
Just to tell me that, you know, it's going to be all right. You know, it's going to be okay. Just get up and go, you know. And that's not a rare thing. You know, I do it quite often. And even for my colleagues who, you know, have become friends, you know, one of whom connected us.
Yeah.
And she lives in Sydney, you know what I mean? It's not rare for me to call her or for us to have a business conference call and completely talk about something else.
Yeah. Because
you know?
she's
need
got
those people.
Yeah, and she's got a lot on her shoulders and she's, you know, got a daughter and there's so much, like, I get that career woman's mother's guilt. I have a Maltese Shih Tzu called Marley that I call Chicken, and I have mother's mother's guilt about him, genuinely.
I love it.
You know, he can't talk to me, so he can't actually say, why do you always have to go to work? I can see it in his eyes. But you guys actually get asked that question by your daughters. She has told me that you're a great support for each other at times. Which I think is amazing. Just on the line of the art of hustling, I read one of your posts and it said, someone once advised me never to wear red lipstick or red nail polish at the office because it was too bold and would send the wrong message. Welp. I'm on my way to Apple HQ to meet with the new CEO. Red nails, red lipstick. Love that. I'm like, you go, girl. Do you know what? Because it's so funny. In my PR job, my boss and I are very close. And we will have, when she's going off to a hardcore meeting or I'm going off, and she'll like have her makeup bag and she'll go, what is it? And I go, who are you meeting with? And she'll say whatever. I go, get that red on right now. Get that red on. And she slaps it on and we just like, you know, like clap each other and go, get out there and get them. But some people, like I was interested in hearing a little bit more about that.
You know, it's like warrior paint to me. And, you know, that's, I think it's also combined in this idea of femme, you know, that I really stick to. I think that for a long time, or I believe for a long time, women were not allowed to be feminine, you know, in the workplace or in senior positions because it would come off too soft and too weak, you know, and so we had to become masculine, you know. It's like, you know, the Hillary's famous pantsuit, you know, it's like, why do you think she wears a pantsuit, you know?
Yeah, because you told her she had to be taken seriously for so long. Now
In order to take her seriously, she had to wear pants, you know. How ridiculous is that notion?
Imagine the ingrained terror she would have with fashion.
Oh my gosh, right. So for me, I so wholly embrace, you know, the feminine, because I really love it. You know, it's not even just like paint or something, you know, superficial, but I really love it. You know, I love my dresses. I love my nails. I love my lipstick. I love my makeup. I love eyelashes. I love hair, you know, and I show it off all the time. And in fact, even when I did the Apple keynote back in June this past year, you know, those were actual choices. You know, I decided to wear a pink dress that was tight fitting and showed off my curves. You know, I decided to wear my hair naturally in big curls. You know, I wanted to wear lipstick that was bright and nail polish that was bright pink. You know, even though, you know, some people made fun of me because they were like, oh, your nails are so distracting because you're, you know, trying to type on the device and we could see them. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course you should see my long pink nails. Who cares?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I painted them to be seen.
This is all part of it.
Yes,
this is all part of it. So to me, the boldness of being able to, you know, accept and fully embrace everything that you are and who you are causes for more confidence, you know, when you walk into a room.
Yeah.
And so, yes, when I met with Tim Cook shortly after WWDC, I chose red nail polish and red lipstick because I wanted to walk in my full confidence. And that was it.
I love, and that is, but that's so much about what you appear to be, is you appear to keep making decisions that are authentic to you.
Right. But you have to, you know, and it's one of the things that I always talk about, especially when I talk to young women who are starting off in their careers, that, you know, they shouldn't try to mirror their, you know, appearance, career, decisions, or anything off of anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, not even me, you know, because the thing is that it will come off inauthentic because it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you've really got to dig deep and figure out what it is that you represent, you know, and maybe it's not even digging deep. You know, how about you just get up and wear what it is you want to wear that day? You know what I mean? Instead of trying to think like, oh, what should I wear in order to appear as such and such in this meeting I'm going to?
Yeah.
You know, that's the first mistake. So to me, it's all wrapped up into this ideal of walking in your full truth, you know? And it was actually one of the best pieces of advice. And I actually got it from Indra Nooyi, who's the CEO of PepsiCo, you know, one of the most powerful women in the world. And she said, you know, bring your whole self to work, you know, your whole self. It's not some part of you. It's not the business part of you. And that's why it's like, you know, some days you'll find my daughter running around the office. You know, it's like, that's part of me too.
That's
you know,
part,
I'm a single mom. And you know, some days like I run out of daycare.
It
has to come, you know. And so you're going to understand that, you know, when I'm crying, listening to somebody's music and it's talking about, you know, their love of their child. Yeah, it's because I'm a mom. You know, and I get it and I empathize. And so all of that we have embodies, you know, who we are, we should bring because it's so wholly uniquely us and the perspective that we're going to have is going to be that much more impactful. You know, instead of trying to be someone else, it's like we should be wholly who we are because no one else can replicate that.
And that's the only one we're going to really be able to nail is the full us.
That's correct. That's correct.
So I just wanted to finish up with saying, you know, I just love the relationship I see with between you and your daughter on Instagram. And as I said, I don't want to sound sycophantic. I think if anyone goes in and actually has a read and a look at your post, they'll see what I mean in terms of there's just this really beautiful, engaging depth that you can really kind of tap into as this sort of story of your life rather than just sitting there admiring someone. And again, I think that one of the angles you show is motherhood, and it's really beautiful. And you can also tell that it's not easy, but you can tell how present you are when you're with her. You know, you're part of one of those incredible people that intuitively is sort of part of this matrix that is forming the cultural world. It's why you've done so well in your career, and it's why you continue to be the one that people look to say, what are we doing next for Apple that's going to keep us at the top of our game? So I find, you know, it's like this kind of incredibly creative, energetic conductor role that you play. And I know that you must, you know, as part of that, you have to have this inner knowing of almost forecasting forward. You know, it's like sort of having this premonition or the deja vu of what's the world going to want in 10 years, 20 years. But I really want to know kind of like what is the world you're trying to create and what you hope for and what you feel for your daughter?
That's a beautiful question. Man, you know, it's like it makes me teary, right? Because, you know, I am so, I'm so enamored by her.
Yeah,
you
I can
know,
tell and so divine. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm completely, it's not even just like I love her because, you know, mother's love, but I actually like her.
You know?
Like I really like her as a person, as her own person. I'm her mom, but like if I wasn't, I would want to be her friend, you know?
Oh, I love that. And if only more mothers treated their relationship like that with their kids.
Because she's just such a, you know, she's such a wonderful person. You know, I look at her as a partner of sorts, you know? Like I said, of course, I'm the mother, I'm the parent, I'm the one who's leading the way, but she's fully engaged in my life. You know, I don't look at her as someone to manage. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at her as someone who is a part of the decision making of our life together, you know? And I think it was probably more pronounced when my husband died because I realized very quickly that I just couldn't do it by myself, you know? And I was looking around trying to figure out, well, who's going to do this with me, you know?
Yeah.
And literally, I mean, quite literally, this real life, this happened. Like, she was laying on my bed asleep. It was the middle of the night. It was like a panicked moment, you know, where I was just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Mm. You know, and I looked at her and I was just like, well, she's the only person here, you know?
And it
kind of formed this thing where in the morning, I looked at her and I was just like, well, it's me and you, kid. You know, this is all we've got, you know? And so for me, at this point, it is, you know, all of that I do, you know, is partly for me, you know, because, yes, I have goals, I have aspirations, I want to achieve, and it makes me happy and satisfied in my career and my personal life when I do. But I also want to create an example for her of strength, you know, and also of vulnerability, you know, that I don't hide my tears from her, you know,
good.
So she knows when I'm sad or when I'm happy or any of the emotions, you
don't
know,
set the unrealistic
and I
benchmark.
Find it very powerful. A realistic benchmark for her that she knows that, you know, yes, of course you can achieve, you know, I'm hopeful that when she's an adult and, you know, she's struggling in her career or whatever she's doing, that she'll look back and say, ah, but my mom did it. You know, my mom was able to, you know, go into a male-dominated space and make it, you know? Like, I hope that she's able to look at that for some inspiration. But I also hope that she's able to look at me and say, ah, but my mom was human. You know, she wasn't some fantastical superwoman. You know, she was a human being who cried when she was hurt, who was scared when she didn't know the answer, who panicked when, you know, she was afraid, you know, that I'm a human being and it's okay to do that and be vulnerable. And so for me, like the greater world that I want to create, especially for her, is one that is realistic, you know, that things are possible, but things are also in a vulnerable space.
What I really think is beautiful too, what you do with her is you make her feel liked. You know, you show that you like her. And that is a really, really sweet great starting block. The, you know, many of us kids start to question very on whether they are likable. Does my mum like me? And I just think that's a really simple, beautiful thing to have with your daughter. And now we have to finish, but it has just been such an honour to have time
this
with you.
This has been wonderful.
I honestly,
what a great conversation with you. I just adore you.
Oh,
you're so wonderful.
You. Oh, thank you.
It's
you
like know, this conversation, is it feels like home. You know, I feel like I'm talking to a girlfriend that I've had forever.
Oh, I love
that.
So
this is wonderful. You have such a great style.
I love it so much. I just feel like I sort of see you, you know, and I admire so much, but I also know that it's not easy and it just sort of inspires me, and I just am incredibly thankful for women like you out in the world, because there's a lot of women where we've got a lot of attention at the moment, everyone's listening. I can hear through a lot of what's being sort of thrown out there that's not quite right and that sort of can put people off, and when I see a woman doing all that you are and honestly it makes me excited, you know. It's women
so
can be unbelievably beautiful to other women when they're people like yourself and when they're honestly sharing. And I thank you very, very much, Bose. And I hope to maybe meet you
great.
You come to Australia at some point.
I know.
That would be so
lovely. I would
so
love that.
Lovely.
That would be so great.
Yeah.
Then we can have a love fest in person, which would be awesome.
Oh, thank you, Bose. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amber. This
Lots
so
of
great.
Love
All
to
right,
you and your
care.
Daughter. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed this episode of The Wise Guides, we'd love you to share it with your friends and subscribe to the show to receive more like this by heading to iTunes or novafm.com.au. This episode was written by me, Amber Petty, and produced in the Nova Entertainment Podcast Studios. Executive producer Andy Milne, audio engineering by Matt Argoon.